Let's try this again. Is this working? I have no idea. It's the news according to me. Well, this is take number three now, trying to get this show to you this morning. I think I'm just going to sit here and watch it fall apart again. I'm going to sit here for an hour and just listen to myself, which is what I do anyway, but I usually talk. I'm not going to talk. I'm just going to be silent for an hour. Brought to you by the news according to me. It's an hour of silence. I wonder, you know what? I'm going to start a podcast. I am going to start a podcast that is nothing but it's a 1 hour of silence podcast. For those of you who just need some peace and quiet, but you can at least feel like you're listening to something. You can put in your headphones, sit there and pretend like you're listening to something and you're actually listening to nothing. You're listening to silence. It's the sound of silence. Let's have a brief moment of just what that might be like. Well, except for that part. It's been an interesting morning here. I've said this now twice, at least twice, maybe three times, the interesting morning I've had. I started the podcast, and I was, everything was going great. About an hour ago. Right now, it's 8:47 a.m. Monday morning. Again, February 21st. 2022, 2021, 2022, whatever. A lot of 20s there. So I started this broadcast in podcast, what do you want to call it? This thing. I started recording here about an hour ago. And I was about 20 minutes into the show, and I apparently had clicked on, I've explained this to you once, actually, but you didn't get to hear it because it wasn't being recorded. I was about 20 minutes into the show, a really good show, by the way, probably one of my best shows ever. And I was just going on about the whole trucker thing and tyranny, and I was solving all the world's problems, as usual, only in a better way, probably more refined than I've ever done it. In a way that would have gone viral, and I'm sure I'd have been a multi-billion dollar operation here by the end of the podcast. But it all fell apart when my cat jumped up here on the I'm going to blame my cat. I thought the cat, and I've told this story already once before. My cat jumped up here on the table, and I was kind of distracted. And I was trying to get the cat. Cat was walking around behind my computer screens here and stuff. And I was scratching on something behind the computer, which was rather unnerving because I wasn't sure exactly what was going on. Now, this is after we cleaned up from all the flooding that happened here last week. The carpet got wet. I call it flooding, but the carpet got wet. And it was a, well, I know what happened, so I need to fix it. I've been knowing I needed to fix it for about 6 months now, and I thought I could wait until spring to fix this, but apparently not. So the cat jumps up here. Well, in the midst of all this stuff going on, there were all these little messages. I'm an iMac, and I've got an iOS system here, Apple. And apparently an update popped up there that said, do you want to update stuff? Well, I was looking at calendar stuff popping up, you know, Happy President's Day. Yeah, you got mail. You got junk mail. More junk mail for you. Kept popping up there. I didn't notice it was, you know, an update thing. And apparently, in the process of this update happening there, I clicked on it, thinking it would just go away. Well, it was going away in the background. It went away to the background, and then it decided that, I guess part of the update was that it had to shut down and restart the computer. So in the middle of the show, An extremely really good show, by the way. Probably one of my best. The cat, you know, was distracting me. I was trying to get the cat out of behind the thing. It was like a circus here. I was solving the world's problems, juggling cats. And in the meantime, the computer decides to shut down. Do you want to save changes to your, it's called a DAW, digital something, audio workstation, whatever that is. Digital audio workstation, DAW. It's which what I record. It's software I use. I use Logic Pro to record all of my fascinating insights. I record via the thing, or the microphone. I plug it into this interface mixer thing over here. And it's complicated. I'm not going to get into it because you wouldn't understand it, I'm sure. It's, you know, you have to plug one thing into something else and then you plug that into the computer. It's pretty complicated. That's all it is. You just do it and it pretty much figures out what you want to do. And it says, okay, start recording. So I was, this was all going just fine, just as planned. I even had a couple notes here of things I wanted to talk about. See, last week I didn't get to have a show. I had one little 20-minute show or 15-minute show, whatever it was. Just talking about how I couldn't have a show because all last week I was working basically 12-hour days. And it was, between that and trying to get stuff, you know, just life in between worked out, you know, so I'd have time to eat and sleep and work out. I call it a workout. It's a walk from the bed to the bathroom. That's my workout. I do, it's a brisk walk, though. So I had a really good show going on there. All of a sudden the whole thing just says, "Do you want to save what you've been recording? Save, you don't want to save the changes?" Well, I figured maybe I was really hoping when I turned it back on that it would come back with the show that I had already recorded. Apparently not. Apparently that's not the case with the way this works. It came back up and my DAW came back up again and it was all great. There was nothing there. So I started recording again. Started the show again, frustratingly. Because it's really hard to recreate. I don't know, for those of you who are creatives, you know, it's kind of like you start into a painting. I'm not a painter, by the way. I have no idea what I'm talking about. I'm not really a creative. I'm just a guy with a microphone. But you know, when you start to do something like that and then you have to go back and redo it, you just can't capture the magic. It just doesn't happen. I do play guitar. Now, when I play guitar, sometimes I'll be making up a song and I'll be kind of going along and making up some words and doing my thing. And if I don't record that, I can't just go back and do it again. There's something happening there in the moment. Sometimes when I get a really good line or get a good phrase or a good chord progression kind of matches what, you know, just the expression of the moment, you lose that. It's hard to recreate that kind of creative fluidness. I'm just calling it that. I don't know what it is. I don't know what I'm talking about. So by the way, what's in my cup this morning? See, I've told you three times now what's in my cup. Or two times. Oh, three times. This is attempt to see. One, two. Yeah, this is attempt number three, I guess. I have chocolate-flavored chai right here that I'm slurping on. And it's cold now because of, you know, it was hot an hour and a half ago. But because of all the frivolity here, it just seems like I can't get a show out before 10 o'clock in the morning. So this one's going to probably be posted around 10 o'clock again, Eastern time. I have found that my listenership goes up if I can get the show put out about 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock, something like that, in the morning. And I get a lot more listens. It almost triples sometimes. Instead of two people, it's sometimes six. Yeah. So this morning, I jotted down some notes. I've been listening to some guys. One of the quotes that keeps coming to me, and this is partially because of Mr. Reagan, Chris, this guy named Chris. He's got a channel on YouTube called Mr. Reagan. This morning he was talking about He's talking about the Super Bowl and how every show, there was only one white person in the Super Bowl this year, in the halftime show. And everybody was black. I don't even know if there was any Hispanics or you know, Mexican, Latino, Native American types. I don't know that there was anybody else. Or, you know, indigenous people from Australia. I don't know. I don't know. He was going on about it and how, you know, it's okay. And this, we'll get into this double standard thing here in a little bit. I talk about double standards with the leftists and how it doesn't matter. They have no moral compass when it comes to this kind of stuff. There's no sense of equality with them, believe it or not. I'll talk about that a little bit later. And it has to do with a sense of, it's a narcissistic sense of being, but I'll talk about that. But again, I'm not a psychologist. I already gave you this, my whole spiel. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a financial counselor, advisor. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a doctor of any kind. I'm not a rodeo clown, even though I want to be. I'm just a guy with a microphone. Let's just face it. I'm a guy with a microphone with a bunch of opinions. So what you do with those is your business. However, I do give you all the privileges and rights to take my advice and my opinions and do whatever you want with them. I don't care. I'm at that age now where I just don't care. And I was listening to this. This is fascinating. This is one of those bunny trails like I'm famous for. I was listening to watching a little show this morning. It was about this fighter who was incredible. His name was, what was his name? Linderberg? I think he's Chinese. So I don't know how he got this Linderberg name. I think I'm probably messing up his name. Maybe. It's very possible I'm messing up his name. I better make sure I'm on the right. Yeah, okay. I'm on the right Wi-Fi here this morning. Oh, here we go. Let's pull this up and see if we can't do something with this. This guy was an incredible fighter. And what made him incredible, even into his 40s, was his ability to control his opponents. And one of his greatest attributes was he was legendary, I guess, is known to be an untouchable individual. Let me see if I can find him here. He was incredible. And it's, let's see here. Untouchable fighter. Untouchable. Let's see what we have here. Yeah. Most untouchable fighter. What's the guy's name? It doesn't say here. Lawrence Kinshaw strikes. Striking breakdowns. He's been known as the fastest fighter. He actually wasn't that fast, even into his 40s. You just don't have the reaction time. I just can't find his name. Lurdzilla, that's his name. Lurdzilla is, I don't know if that's his real name, but that's just his, he was more of a, probably more of a, of an, of a entertainer, as much of an entertainer as he was a fighter. Incredibly good fighter, don't get me wrong. But he was very entertaining. Crowds just loved him because of the way he would antagonize his opponents and just control them, dominate them. And it wasn't that he was incredibly powerful when it came to striking. It was that he was able to avoid being struck. He had this uncanny ability to read his opponent and slip and dodge and sway. He was able to check everything. You know, people would try to punch him, powerful punches right to his face, and he'd just back up and look at him. Just look at the guy. Incredible. Well, the amazing thing about this was that there was this guy who was fairly new. Lord Zilla was like he had fought like 100 straight wins, I think. And nobody could touch the guy, literally. It was just amazing. And he was like a ninja out there. And he ended up, ironically, this guy with 20 fights, 20 wins, had, I think, 20 fights total professionally, studied this guy and came up with a strategy to beat him. And he did. He knocked him out. Really rattled him. And it's fascinating to hear this guy talk about how he did it, how he defeated him. It's just the study and the science of this of fighting is of a martial art, a warlike art. It's fascinating. It was what happened with him. I'm sure that if Lord Zilla would have had a chance to study what he was going to do, he probably would have known how to counter. You know, that would have been an even more in-depth fight. Interesting. I'm not into. I used to be into fighting. I'm not anymore. I'm old man rules. You go to a competition now. It's old man rules. It's like, okay, usually all the guys get together. If you're over 50, everybody gets together and says, okay, we got to go to work on Monday. Let's not hurt anybody. We got lives. These kids out here can beat each other to death and they can walk it off. We're still walking off most of our lives right now. All the stuff that happened to us, we're still walking that off. We don't need anything else additional. So anyway, that's the way we roll now. There's this interesting thing about Old Dog. This is my side note to a side note, by the way. I want to keep you up to date on what's happening here with the show. This is a bunny trail that has a side note. Okay, there's a difference between a side note and a bunny trail. I'm on a bunny trail right now, but there's a side note to the bunny trail. An old dog typically will, the younger dogs are messing around and trying to pull its tail, whatever. It doesn't really get too agitated or snap at anything until it gets serious. At some point, if the old dog senses that his well-being is in jeopardy, he won't waste his energy on all the little scrappy stuff. He knows he's only got a limited amount of energy, first of all, and he's going to use it as efficiently as possible. And it's going to count, and it's going to hurt. When he snaps, it's, however many years of his existence of experience is going into that one snap. And it's going to hurt. This is much like fighters as they get older. They say that it's much like dynamite. It grows more dangerous with time. And, it also gets more unstable. But we won't talk about that. So the point here is that as fighters get older, they may not be better fighters, but they are more dangerous. you just don't want to mess with an old dog. Young kids think, oh, I can fight, I can brawl, all that stuff. Well, the old timers aren't in it for that. Most of them. They're going to protect their life and their livelihood. And they'll put up with a whole lot until it gets to the point where that tipping point, it's serious. And guess what? They mean business when it happens. It's going to be, Just a side note on the bunny trail. So now let's take from the bunny trail, let's go back to what I was talking about. The principle here, and one of the things that this one announcer, this one analyzer guy, this guy that was talking about, this one little show that was talking about what kind of a fighter this guy was. He had something, this fighter, Lord Zilla, had something that a lot of people do not have or do not even understand. And I've come to the conclusion, after listening to this, it just rang true to me, but just immediately. something called outcome independence. I had never heard of the term. Outcome independence. But this is what has frustrated some of my employers. I literally had one employer recently, not in the past 20 years, recently. That's recent. That's recent history for me, for when you get my age. If it's been within the past score. And the interesting thing that they said to me was, we're not sure how to motivate you because you're really not motivated by money. They thought, if they could pay me more, it's not about funds. It's not about money. It's not about any of that. He's not motivated by any of that. So we're not sure exactly how to motivate him. There were younger kids there that were working in this organization, and they could say, well, we're going to pay you, another dollar an hour if you do this, or we're going to take away your money if you. That didn't matter to me. I wasn't there for the money. I've never really been motivated by money. That can be as much of a downfall. You think that's not true. You're motivated by money. No, I'm not. And that's the problem. I just do what I enjoy and do what I want to do, and I work hard at what I want to do. So I have to find something that I want to do that I can make an income on, or I'll be one of the happiest people living in the street. That's what I'll be, making arts and crafts. So there's this dichotomy there. It's this parabolum. It's a paradox. Pair of ducks? I don't know. It's something. It's one of those things. I don't know what it is. It's one of those things where it's opposing itself, and I'm just not motivated by money, and there's very few things that do motivate me in that respect, other than just learning and enjoying what I'm doing and digging into something. Now, I've discovered about myself that I am something what's called a, and you can look this term up. It's called a multi-potentialite. There are more multi-potentialites out there than you think, but most people don't realize that they are, if they are one. And I ran into a guy on YouTube a while back, and you could just tell he was struggling. He was doing these videos, and he was really talented in what he was doing in terms of doing the videos. And he would do something, and then he would kind of do something else. And these videos never really had any kind of channel. They weren't really. It was just random stuff. I'm going to fix a broom today, and the next day he'd be, working on a light switch, and the next day it'd be, and you could just tell he was kind of rambling around. I mean, the shows were good. It was the most fascinating show about fixing a broom I've ever seen, but he wasn't sure, and you could just tell there was something was nagging him, and he kind of almost started to spill over a little bit in some of his videos about, he was struggling mentally, trying to figure out his purpose kind of thing. And I finally sent him a message on his video, responded to a comment in his video. I don't know if he'd read it or not. He did. It seemed like he was reading most of his comments because he didn't have very much of a following at the time. And it was interesting. He responded to something I said, and then I said, it seems like you're struggling with trying to find your niche and trying to just get in the channel of doing one thing. Like you're trying to find it out what it is you want to do when you grow up and still haven't found that thing because you're just all over the place. And I said, I struggled with this for a while. I said, what I'm noticing about you is that you might want to look up the term multi-potentialite and see if that, in fact, there's a TED talk about it. You might want to look into that and see if it, kind of, if there's anything there that maybe this kind of helps you to understand who you are. So this was, for me, it was very freeing for me to understand it's okay to be this way. I am wired this way, and there's nothing wrong with it. The world would have us to believe that we are supposed to have a career. And maybe you'll change that career once or twice in your life. but it won't stray far from that career. Like if you're a pilot, for example, that you will be a pilot, maybe for a corporate operation, and then you'll change that career to a commercial pilot, or you'll become a aircraft salesman of some sort. Or you'll work administratively in the airline industry. So you're still working in that field of understanding and knowledge that you have. But that, my friends, is not the way I'm wired. Now, I have to say, aviation is one particular occupation that I have probably found the most interest in, because there's so many varying ways to go about mastering things within aviation. However, let me just give you some examples. At a very early age, I got into martial arts. I was 17 when I graduated high school. By the age of 18, I had my own Taekwondo studio. I was teaching two classes a day, sometimes three, sending students to I was going to competitions all over the region, from Indiana. I was going to Detroit. I was going to Indianapolis and Chicago, quite a few in Chicago mostly. This was back in the 80s, early 80s. And then I kind of moved on. I was also, at the same time, I was working on this other thing called being a scuba instructor. Well, I got into scuba diving in high school. When I got out of high school, I went off to California. This was kind of in the middle of doing my martial arts training. And I went through a 3-month course from Professional Association of Diving Instructors, PADI, the PADI organization. They had a college out there called the Gold College in San Diego, California, on Rosecrans. And from the time you started to the time you graduated, you had every single certification that PADI offered. It was you were a research diver, rescue diver, all kinds of, we even trained and worked out with the county lifeguard there in San Diego for a while. And yet you were certified in CPR and all the other stuff that was going on. You had all these certifications. You were also a certified repair person for U.S. divers. You went through all this stuff, photography. It was every merit badge that they offered, basically everything that you could get from PADI. And so I went through the whole class, went through the whole thing, and I started my own scuba diving school. At the same time I was doing, operating a karate studio. I was about 19 years old at that time. It wasn't long after that. Now, I had grown up in the church, and it wasn't long after that I got involved in, more heavily involved in the church. Well, I didn't just get involved in the church. I kind of had this, I had one of those moments where, just started taking my faith seriously. It was more than just my parents' religion. Now, it was my faith, and it was my relationship with God. Well, I didn't just start, attending more. I went off to Bible college for a year, became a licensed minister, and started working as youth pastor in a couple different places, and did some work like that. Went overseas. Went and ended up going to Nigeria for a while. It wasn't just if you understand what a multipotentialite is, you don't just learn something and then kind of hang out with that. You learn something and it becomes almost an obsession, to the point where you become a master of what you're doing. Not that you are the best at what you're doing, but that you master that task. And then you're bored with it. You move on. I got into aviation in 1985. Always wanted to be a pilot, but never, I thought, I'll just get my pilot's license. So I got my pilot's license. Next thing you know, I'm a flight instructor. Next thing you know, I own my own flight school. In 92, I started my own flight school. And I didn't just have one I had one airplane to start with. Next thing you know, I have 8 airplanes. Several flight instructors, and my own mechanic, and somebody running the office. Well, I had to shut that down, because, you know, and it wasn't just flight instructing. It was banner towing and trying to get into skywriting and then doing, I thought I would get into doing cargo. I was going to start a cargo operation. Should have done that. But I got sidetracked and got into some corporate jobs for a couple, you know, a while, charter and corporate jobs, flying small jets. And then I ended up kind of just out on a whim, got a job with an airline, small regional airline. Longest job I ever had, 7 years, a little over 7 years, worked there. Longest place of employment I'd ever been to, outside of my own business. Well, I started up my own business again in 2005, and by the time 2007 rolled around, I had to get out of that because, you know, my business was going to be a big deal. I was going to buy my own airplane and have somebody fly me around. So I ended up doing that and went all in. It was a completely different industry, totally different industry. Of course, then 2008 hit, the economy tanked. By the end of 2009, I had to shut the place down. It just wasn't going anywhere. And that particular sector of industry got hit really hard, worse than COVID. So it was one of those deals. So guess what? I got my broker's license in real estate. I just went out and did that. My dad had a real estate company, and I was kind of helping him, but I went and got my broker's license just to get it done. I thought I could help him out, and kind of, you know, he was getting older. Well, then he passed away, so I was kind of there to close things down for him. And it took about a year. Real estate just wasn't my thing. I've never been real administrative. I'm more on the creative side. And it's been, you know, and I've been in and out of doing, in the meantime, all this stuff happening, I've done church plants, worked on the staff for a couple churches, got involved with a mega church for a little while. Stuff like that, you know, just different things. And getting back to that whole thing, there's this thing called outcome independence. In other words, you really don't care. This fighter that I'm talking about, this Lordzilla guy, he didn't really care if he won or lost. He was there for the pure enjoyment of it and the interaction that he had with his fans in the crowd. This kind of motivation, they said, this is incredibly hard. A person who has that mindset, that attitude, in so many ways, has an extreme the advantage over other people around them, because they don't care what the outcome is. That's a distraction. It's a worry. It's something that chokes people. That's why people choke in moments of competition or in moments of performance. Now, having said that, there are some things. There is one area where outcome matters to me, and it is an area that I can find myself beating myself up pretty badly. And that is when what I'm doing affects someone else or has the potential to affect someone else. That's the one outcome probably that can rattle me to my core. I have over the years, since I was about 18, about 18, I picked up a guitar. A friend of mine that I worked with sold me a Yamaha classical guitar for $100. First guitar, real guitar I ever owned. And I tried to learn chords, and of course, my hands were just weren't going where I wanted them to, and it was really frustrating. And I learned like one song, and I knew that song. I would play that song all the time because it was the only one I knew. And I'd learn a couple others, and I'd try to do some chords, and it was frustrating. I tried to learn some songs that I could do, like worship songs. Back in the 80s, that was a time of what they called CCM, Contemporary Christian Music. It wasn't really worship music. It was more pop music kind of set to the gospel story. Music has taken a turn in terms of Christian music today. I'm seeing it fade from this now, but there's in some sectors, there's becoming this definitely a division between the types of music that's out there. And it's not a bad thing necessarily. It's just music started to become more and more of a worship, had more of a worship format. In other words, it wasn't music about God, or it wasn't music about life and wondering about God or talking about God. It was music that was to God. It was setting your prayers to music. It was more this intimate interaction, talking to God or singing to God. And this is my, ironically, this is one of the things that I contend with people who want to sing hymns in church. Hymns are great. They are full of theology and doctrine. That's awesome. I can probably name on one hand, I can count the number of songs that have that are a song of prayer. In other words, they are an intimate song sung to him and not about him. Hymns, ironically, are mostly about God. They are not songs sung to God. Or dare I even say, some songs now, modern songs, are songs where God is actually, they're speaking the words of God about you, occasionally. And this is not what hymns are at all, in by and large. Now, there are some songwriters, hymn writers, that wrote 1,800 hymns. And of course, in the hymnals that we have, we might have maybe 50 of those, of what they wrote. You know, they weren't all hits. I'm going to call them that. And so this is one area where when I lead worship, I've become a worship leader over the past, I don't know how many years. In the 2000s, I started kind of leading worship more and more. In the early part of the century, I was doing some small group stuff back in the 90s, but really started leading more in the 2000s, in that realm, that era. I did a couple of large group events late 90s, right before 2000. It was the first time I led worship in an organization at a group meeting of like 300 people, blew me away. It just blew me away. And it was fascinating for me to do that. It was an experience I'll never forget. I still remember that to this day. It was over 20 years ago, and it's still like it was yesterday. And then, of course, I still do a lot of small group stuff, and I still kind of stay. I prefer small groups to some extent, because it's just the ability to kind of lead and kind of read the group and see where we're going and just kind of flow with whatever's happening, change the songs up. When you've got a big band, you know, that you're playing with, it's a little harder to steer that ship and make, you know, changes along the way and just, you know, add another chorus or make something up and keep going. Sometimes I'll make up a chorus or make up some lines and keep going. That's kind of difficult with a band. It takes a special group of people to be able to do that. However, The one, getting back to this whole thing about outcome independence. If I lead worship and I have any sense of failure in that process, like, oh, I should have done this, I should have gone there, or I made a mistake and it kind of messed things up and I distracted people by doing something. I don't want to distract anyone. In the process of leading worship, you're not leading, just leading songs and performing. It goes way, way, way beyond that. That's not even, you know, that's not even a part of what you should be doing up there. It's a matter of leading people like an usher finding their place before God. It's like you're ushering them in to sit down, helping them find that place before God where they can have an intimate personal experience. Not, wow, that song was powerful. It really moved me emotionally. That's not, you know, you can go to any concert and that can happen. This goes further than that. If that's even, it's not even the same direction. It's not comparable. I don't know how to compare that. It's a holy experience. It's different. It's other. It's holy. And if I somehow step into that, and distract someone from that, for me, that is a sense of failure that I cannot get over. I can't get beyond it. I have been there a few times. So, in that sense, there are some weaknesses that we have. It's like an Achilles heel type thing, I guess. However, in most things in life, outcome independence is extremely powerful. In the last couple of weeks, I have the position I have at this one company. I've been more of a teacher, training people who are onboarding, and in the process, of course, because I'm a multi-potential agent. So I've been doing more of that stuff. It's interesting. I even caught myself telling the students, I don't care. I mean, I know it sounds ridiculous. I don't, if you guys want to learn or not, I don't care. I don't, that's not the way it is. If they fail, if they don't make it through and pass all the things that they need to do, all the accomplishments that they need to make through during this training process, I will feel like I have failed them. Now, but I have control over that. I can affect that teaching. So I don't mind the challenge of finding a way. Everybody learns a little bit differently. And for me, the challenge is finding a way to teach that particular individual who doesn't learn necessarily exactly like someone else. How can I relate a story? How can I get through to them on this concept or this principle? They need to learn. They need to understand. How do I need to talk to them and relate to them where they're at and what they will understand and their transfer of learning from me to them? How can I best convey what I need to teach them? It's a challenge. I like that kind of challenge. It's more of a one-on-one kind of experience. What I'm doing, it's one-on-two, but I train two people at the same time at a time, typically. And for me, that's a challenge because they have to work together as a team. Plus, I have to work with them individually to make sure that they are as individuals prepared. And I like that kind of challenge. But at the same time, I will do anything that I need to do to get them to, get them to understand that. And I don't care whether it's by the book or not. And that's where I don't care. Whether the company, sometimes the company might look at that, my unconventional methods of teaching and say, well, the book says you're supposed to do it this way. Well, that's great. Take your book and I'll go home. It's one of those things where, I'm in an age where I just don't care. I mean, I care, but it's like I don't. I'm too old for this. Sometimes I catch myself saying that I don't need this. I'm here because I want to be, not because I have to be. And if it becomes one of those issues where they show up and they say, hey, we don't like the socks you're wearing, I'll say, well, then I'll go home. I'll rent a car and I'll go home. Or whatever. Anyway, I have to get home. Fine. If it's a problem, then you take care of this. See ya. I'm out the door. I like being here. I like what I'm doing. I really enjoy it, and I really like helping this company. But if my socks are getting in the way of that, then I'm not going to change my socks. Sorry. Bye. If that's all you care about is what socks I'm wearing. Now, it's not that ridiculous, but sometimes it is. I've actually heard of people being confronted about their socks. At that point, I would just say, well, if this is a safety issue, or if this is distracting, or if you've got a problem with it, then I'll take my socks home with me right now, but I'll be wearing them. So I guess I'm going with them. And you'll have to figure out what you're going to do with what you got to do here. See you later. If that's a problem, you can put a little red mark on my work record. You see, I'm at an age where that doesn't matter anymore to me. I don't care. I don't care about that. I care about my socks. I don't want them to be alone. Or I could just take my socks off and wear shoes without socks. That sounds like a much better idea. Especially, I don't need my socks on the beach, by the way. So I'll just, instead of going home, I'll tell you what, I'm gonna go to the beach where I can take my socks off and just put my toes in the sand. I'll just do that. Well, then call me when you want me to come back. I'll consider it. Without my socks. It's been a whole show about me. You know, I haven't even talked about the news. I was loaded for bear. When the first show came out this morning, this is the third show now today. You didn't get to hear the first two. The first show was awesome, man. I rolled right into this whole thing. I was all over Trudeau. I believe, by the way, since I don't care about the outcome, This is serious stuff. What's going on in Ottawa? I don't think they realize that. One of the things I talked about this morning was you don't poke the bear. We have this saying up north here in the North Country. You don't poke the bear. You might be out there fishing, and the bear's watching you fish, and he's hoping you're going to throw him a couple of them. If you don't, maybe he'll just come over and eat you. And in the process, you don't just take a stick over there and poke him. That would be stupid. Just saying, stupid is as stupid does. Stupid is as Trudeau does. This whole thing that they just did to crack down and take back their city. Take back their city. Who are you talking to? And who are you talking about? Who is this? Their city. Who is this they you're talking about? Is that one of your personal pronouns? Which, by the way, here's a side note. Not a bunny trail, side note. When someone says their personal pronouns are they and them, do they refer to themselves as we and us? How many of them are there living in that person there? I usually hear them call themselves I and me. Because that is what it's all about. It's all about them. Them and they. And there. Those. It's plural. It's a plural word. There's a reason we don't have a... If you listen to Matt Walsh, you'll get everything I try to say there. If he had a show about this whole thing a while back. So, listening to Mr. Reagan this morning. What's his name? I can't think of his last name. There's a show called Mr. Reagan on YouTube. And he was talking about how the halftime show at the, what was it called? What was that thing called? Super Bowl? I guess it was Super Bowl. I was so disinterested in it this year that I actually went out to eat. I think I went to Texas Roadhouse. Got in there, sat down. The lady who sat me down at this little booth thing sat me down. So she, you know, they put the silverware down on a particular, and the bread and stuff, thinking that you're supposed to sit on this side. Like they're choosing the side you want to sit on. I typically sit on the other side just to tick him off. But I usually, there's a specific place I usually like to sit in a room. There's a whole, that's a whole psychological thing too, but it drives my wife nuts. She knows I tend to like to sit a certain way in a restaurant. And so she sat me down at this booth. Of course, I sat on the other side just because that's the side I would normally sit on. I didn't think about anything until I started hearing some people at the bar over in the area, bar area, cheering about something. So I looked over to look at all the televisions up there, and all of them but one were all the same thing. There was some football game going on. And I realized it was the Super Bowl. At some point, I thought, oh, you know what? I bet the Super Bowl is playing. I bet that's what this is all about. And sure enough, that's what it was. I couldn't care less. But apparently, the only thing I used to like, the commercials. The commercials now are just stupid. And yes, Kevin Sorbo recently apparently said, have you noticed lately that a lot of the commercials now have a certain demographic now portraying all the commercials, which is fine. And of course, he took a lot of flack for noticing that. Well, you're a racist because you noticed it. I notice it because I'm in marketing. He notices it because he's an actor. Anybody who watches can notice because it's disproportionate. If 60% of the population supposedly is still white, Caucasian, European, and 90% of the people in commercials are people of color and or other things, that's disproportionate to society. And yet, I think it's more brave now to do a whole commercial with nothing but European white people. It's amazing to me. Now, what really has aggravated me, I think I've told everybody, if you've listened to my show for very long, I do voiceover work. That's actually what I do for a living. That's my business. It's not what I do for this other company at all. But it's what I do. And that's my bread and butter. But the thing that really aggravates me is once in a while I get these auditions. They come through this little service I have provided for me. They send me all these auditions that I can do. And one of the things that I get occasionally, now I have on my particulars, on my profile, I have down what I kind of voices I do. But occasionally those other things slip through. I'm a male. I don't do female voices. So I don't have that on my thing. But once in a while, stuff comes through for female. They're looking for a female. Well, why did you send this to me then? This came through and I wasn't, because they didn't check the box when they put their audition out there. So this occasionally happens, and you'll see they're looking for an African American voice. Now, this bothers me. And I have put down, I have on many occasions, I have responded to those. You can accept or reject the invitation. Normally I just delete them. In those cases, I actually reject the invitation because they give you a little box where you can say why you rejected it. And I'll just put on there, my voice is not the right skin color. Because it is extremely, in my opinion, extremely divisive and racialist to say I'm looking for an African-American voice. Who's to say I'm not an African-American? It's, is this a problem? Because are you triggered by this? Because let me tell you something. Back when, I don't know, maybe you don't remember, back when OJ was going through his trial, there was a witness that said, I heard someone in the alley between the house and the fence, or the garage and the fence, I think it was. And they were talking loudly, almost to the point of yelling on their phone or whatever they were doing. And they sounded black. The courtroom and the defense exploded from that statement. Well, what does a black man sound like? People don't sound black. People don't sound black. It's like, okay, well, whatever. Whatever. Because apparently, Ebonics is not a thing. Tell me, folks. Really? Now, there are white men who can talk like, we're talking about ghetto talk, right? Whatever you want to call it. There's a certain lingo in the culture that exists. And if we want to deny reality, go ahead. This is reality, folks. People from the North talk different than people from the South. Hello? There are people in certain cultures that talk differently than others. Hello? If we can't just acknowledge reality, then because we don't want to live in reality. We want to live in this weird utopian thing where we're just looking for a reason to call somebody a racist. We're not saying one is right and one is wrong. It's just different. What bugs me is this standard I've never gotten an audition that says we're looking for a white man. A white male Christian man. A fully heterosexual white male Christian man to do this voice for us. I've never heard that. In fact, it's usually quite the opposite. There are many commercials now that don't just have, and it's not just about the thing where they have all these people of color or different orientations in advertising, in advertisements in on TV and radio. The problem is, it's everybody except for a white man. And sometimes the only white man in the commercial is the bad guy and or the stupid one. These are the kind of things that irritate me a little bit. Now, I'm all about having artistic creativity and the freedom to do so. And I have this issue sometimes with some people in my life. Where it's not the issue that you're doing something that really bothers me. It's the issue that you don't allow anybody else to do that. You can't see it within yourself, the hypocrisy and the double standard. That is really at the core of what makes me mad. Rules for thee and not for me. That's what really makes me mad. I don't mind the rule. I don't mind the criticism. I don't mind the problem you have with whatever this is that I'm doing that bothers you. The thing that really, really strikes at the core of my anger is that if you do the same thing and you can't see it within yourself and how it affects those around you, not I can deal with it. I don't have a problem with you doing what you're doing. The problem is you wouldn't allow me to do that. You'd throw a fit. That, friends, aggravates me. But as I've said, the left does not see beyond themselves. It is a group hysteria. And I would say even a group narcissistic attitude that perpetuates this divisive, I'm not a doctor, not a psychologist. I'm going to settle down. I'm just an observer of life. And this is my observation. And this is exactly what Trudeau and his ilk have done. They've asked for the chief of police has resigned up there. Ottawa police, I believe it's the Ottawa police department, resigned. Whether he wanted to or whether he just was told to, I don't know which it was. Whether he wouldn't obey a certain order, wasn't willing to do what they wanted him to do, so that's why he backed out, or if he just didn't want to be a part of it, or if they asked him to leave because he was pushing back. I don't know. All I can tell you is the new Ottawa chief of police has swept in with horses blazing, trampling on people, doing whatever they had to do. And no, it was not a bicycle being thrown at a horse. This lady was on a scooter, a assisted walking scooter type thing, not, you know, like a hum around type thing. She didn't ram the horse. She didn't throw it at the horse. There's video of this whole thing. It is absolutely pathetic. Rebel News has done some really good reporting on this. If you get a chance, check out Rebel News and what's happening. They have a live thing going on all the time up there. Basically, they wanted it all cleaned up by the end of the weekend. I think they've got it all. It's all taken care of now. And they're all really, this police officer is really proud of himself. The one channel I listen to, guy's name is, I can't pronounce his last name, Robert Glare or something. I don't know what his last name is. He's a lawyer he's a defense lawyer out of Arizona. Has a show called Watching the Watchers. Really good. Now, all of this happening, Nancy Pelosi decides that she's going to put fences up around the Capitol again. Now, she told you, she dismissed this whole idea that she has anything to do with Capitol. She has nothing to do with Capitol Police. And yet she's telling them what to do. She's in charge of Capitol Police. If she tells the Capitol Police to stand down, they will stand down. Speaker of the House is in charge of them. She's third in line of the president. She can't just dismiss this kind of stuff. And this just aggravates me more and more every time she opens her mouth and her teeth don't fall out. It's
for the children. The children, it's for the children. The children, the children, the children. I have to run again because the children.
Because we're all her children. She thinks of herself as the mother of this country.
We need parents. They're going to have to be our parents up there.
You know, you realize that if aliens came and just sucked up the whole, everybody out of Washington, all the representatives, all of our senators and congressmen, they just all disappeared. Aliens came in and just, they're gone.
Guess what?
The government, they act like, our government was saved. That Adam Kinzinger, you guys held the line. You guys did it. You know, our country was hanging in the balance. We almost lost our country. You guys did it. Yeah. Kinzinger, you're an idiot. Okay, first of all, the government of the country, isn't you. You're not the government, okay? They seem to have this misunderstanding of who the government is. The government is for the people. The government is of the people. And the government is by the people. And the founding fathers understood very clearly, made it very clear, that we are self-governed. That representatives go to Washington to represent us and defend our individual rights. Not to go and find ways to group people together and give them special rights. And yet, this is happening. Every day, they're up there on the hill, patting themselves on the back, making it sound like they are there to give us more rights. They never gave us our rights to begin with. I can see that this show is going to have to go on. I want to have an afternoon show. And today, apparently, I have the time to do that. So this evening there will be another show. It may be from the world headquarters office because I need to get over there. It's almost, it's going to be noon before I get out of here. Just so you know, that's what's probably going to happen today. Because we're up over an hour now with this show. And all I see is, you know, we've got to get, there's a whole lot more information to talk about here. I want to talk about what's going on with the trucker thing up in the convoy up there. What's happening here in America? Ronald Reagan, one of the statements that he made, and I hear this quote all the time from a lot of different people in the liberty movement. Fascism in America will come in the form or in the name of liberalism. What we are seeing in Ottawa from Trudeau and everything that's happening up there is the flushing out of that. We are seeing it firsthand unfolding before us. Make no mistake. That is fascism. When there's not a national emergency, but they're making the emergency the protest, we've got a problem. And people are recognizing it. This is not boding well for Mr. Trudeau. I don't know how this is going to work out. All I can say is people are not happy right now with this whole mess up there. And I think our government is teetering. They're watching very carefully what's happening up there because they realize this could happen. This could very quickly come to our shores right here because there's a convoy already starting on the West Coast. And they are already trying to use big tech and everything else to crack down on it. Now, they're talking about taking funds away. They're chasing down anybody who gave money to this thing and going after them, penalizing them, putting them in jail. Folks, this is not going to bode well. They are poking the bear. And if there was ever a time for the Second Amendment, it is getting closer and closer all the time. They have got to stop this rhetoric. They have got to stop this kind of leadership. Because they're ruling with a fist. And the people of this country will not take it. I guarantee you, they are poking the bear. And it's just going to be a mess. I'm not saying it's the answer. I'm saying it's going to cause a mess like we've never seen before. We need to pray. Believers, pray for our nation. I think there's a lot more bubbling up in the hearts of people right now than we know. And we are just not ready to take another hit from government. From this, I say government, I mean the bureaucrats up on the hill. I'm hearing some very common folk, very even-tempered people. People who are, I would consider, independents, and even some people on the left are saying this is going too far. This has gotten out of hand. The radicals have got to be stopped. I'm hearing that from average, everyday, normal people. So we will pray for our leaders, our leadership, for our country, for those who are voting, that we have some kind of resolve on this whole issue, and that somehow our country can be somehow unified again. We are tediously close. I think closer to something happening here in our country than there is with Ukraine. That's a whole other thing I want to talk about. So there will be a show this afternoon, Lord willing. And I'm going to dive into more of the political stuff of what's happening in this country and how it all relates to where we are today. So, with all of that being said, I have to scoot out of here, get this thing posted, so you can listen to it. It is 9:55 now, already. It only took me 3 hours to do this show. I guess 2 hours. Hopefully it uploads quickly. Hopefully my internet service works well. And I don't lose it between now and then because I'll just be frustrated. I'll probably just wait to do a show this afternoon. So if you're listening to this, glad it got done. But if you're not, I'll just talk to you this afternoon and you won't even know I did this show. Thanks for listening, folks. Thanks for subscribing and being a part of the news, according to me. Listening to my opinions and my stories and my sidetracks and bunny trails. That's what this show is all about. God bless everybody. Have a great day. We will discuss later.